I'd like to say good morning to everybody. We wish you a great Lord's Day morning. We're so thankful for the time to be together in the way that we can right now. We appreciate so much the interest and the encouragement of our brothers and sisters in the Lord from all over, but from our congregation here at Watermill especially. I want to say to all of you that you have made us all very thankful, very proud for the kind of faithfulness that we've seen in your life and the kind of love among each other that we have seen. Of course, scripturally speaking, we recognize that honoring your mother is a lifetime project. It doesn't fit with one day. Speaking as a citizen of our country, however, we wish every one of you who are moms a very happy Mother's Day. I hope you're on your home pew this morning with your children if they are around. I hope that they have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich made for your lunch after a while, and hope you have a great day today. If your mother is not with you, or if your children are off on their own now, then we hope this day brings the opportunity to remember all the best times in your life and to give thanks for them and to be encouraged by them. Did you know that Mother's Day actually originated in the mind of a lady by the name of Ann Reeves Jarvis? Ann Reeves Jarvis lived in West Virginia in the 1860s. She came up with the idea of celebrating Mother's Friendship Day, she called it. She was the mother of 13 children, but her idea had a much more important reason behind it than you might have guessed. Mrs. Jarvis was a social activist, and she hoped that that one special day would quiet some of the seething animosity between Union and Confederate soldiers, in addition to their families and their neighbors at the end of the Civil War. It's interesting to think about that kind of a purpose with our day-to-day and what remembering the best in our moms in the light of our faith in the Lord might mean to us in our country right now. We're glad today to have Luke Lyons here to lead us in our first prayer. Paul will lead us in our thoughts as we observe the Lord's Supper in our services today. We're glad to have Carrie Cole here to help us with our songs. John Ewing will share with us some news about our congregational life, and then we'll lead us in our prayer. Thank you again for being with us. Let's serve the Lord together now. We think it's appropriate to think about the love of our moms against the background of that song about the love of the Lord for all of us. I've thought a good bit about what I owe to my mom in one particular way. And it's in what I got from her early in my life that later in my life, because of the faith of the Christ, I've learned to respect even more and to appreciate even more. It might be a good exercise for all of us to think about what we owe to our moms in that way. What becomes more precious to us that we got from her after we begin to follow the Lord, or as we try to live our lives for Him? Before I try to express appreciation both to the Lord and for my mother by sharing some of the things I've come up with in this way with you, there are a couple things I think maybe it'd help if you understood. First, as I am, and as you are, and as all of us are, she was broken and not perfect. She didn't have to be perfect to teach me some things that are going to be forever important in my life. I think it helps just to realize it's okay for us to face the fact that all good parenting that's done in this world is done by people who are not perfect. And I say that to say to you moms, don't let any kind of guilt or feeling of shortcoming or whatever spoil for you the possibility of rejoicing over the blessing that you are in the lives of the young ones that you raised or are raising. You don't have to be perfect to be a blessing. Second, I'm not saying, as I enumerate these things that I got from Mom, that I always have been able to live up to these principles as I wanted to, or that I'm even able to do it now. My point's just that my respect for some of these basic things has deepened as the years have passed, and that I owe Mom for it. And I know that. Now, once we've understood those two things, and because I think it might help all of us, here's what I know in the Lord now, but I can see I got from Mom then. And be aware, as we think about this, that I'm offering these points more of as illustrations than as things I want for us to memorize today. And I hope you'll consider them in that way. I know in the Lord, but I got from Mom, that I've had an opportunity to do something with my life that other family members didn't get to do for one reason or another. I remember at least early in elementary school and possibly before, my mother's way, I suppose, of telling me that she was proud of me and she thought I had some ability and some possibility in my life, something I'm sure she did to my siblings as well, that I could have the chance to do some good things, that I'd have a chance to engage in some opportunities in my work life or in other parts of my life that she and all of the people who love me would be proud of. She was going to be proud of me anyway, she'd say, but you could do some things in your life. As I've learned about the Lord, I've seen something of how much God wants us all to think about that possibility, this possibility in our lives, knowing that we're made in His image and that we started out good and that He's loved us enough to seek to redeem us and then to turn us into the image of His Son is a great dose of self-respect. In the New Testament, Jesus' dealings with His people makes this point even more obvious. His story about the talents being amounts of money, but the story having a point that's caused us to use the word in a different way. He calls he's going on a journey, this man is, and he calls his servants to him, and he entrusts each one of them different amounts of his property. He gives them these things, and then he goes on his journey. And then, after a long time, he comes back, and he begins to settle the accounts. That makes us see that there are ways that we need to do our best, and that we need to understand that we're using what we can't keep forever. Peter in 1 Peter 4 in verses 10 and 11 speaks of our being good stewards of God's manifold gifts, of His manifold grace, that whether we speak or serve, we should do it as the oracles of God and with the strength that God supplies. That still is a needed exercise in life that I can see Mom got me started trying to do. Second, I know in the Lord, but I got from Mom that you don't always get what you want when you want it, but that you can still appreciate what you do have. Learning to, as a child growing, learning to handle the things that don't turn out exactly like you thought they should have or would have, or not being able to succeed how you want to exactly, or get what you think that you would really like to have, that can either lead to disappointment that makes you feel sorry for yourself, or to envy of other people, or to gratitude for what you do have. I owe to Mom the ability to at least to some degree, to try to do that latter thing. And the more I can see of the faith of Christ, the more I can see that's how He wants us to be. Jesus in Matthew 6 and verse 25, in trying to teach us not to let our lives be torn up by anxiety over what we're going to eat or what we're going to wear, says, "Is not life more than food and the body more than clothing?" Life is more than just getting what you want when you want it. Paul in 1 Timothy 6 makes the point that we didn't bring anything into the world, and it's for certain that we're not going to carry anything out of it. So right now, godliness with contentment is the greatest gain. Third, I know in the Lord, and I got from Mom first, that when you mess up, you still can be accepted and loved. I did at times mess up. Maybe you didn't, and you didn't need a mom like this, but my guess is that we all do. Some years ago, I ran across a little piece by Irma Bombeck. It was written for Mother's Day originally, but it's a little writing that says humorously the importance of having a mom who loves you anyhow. She said that mothers are the persons who roll out of bed each day to teach and to serve and to listen and to counsel and to nurture. They're probably the only person in the world who loves you enough to hold you in their arms after you've just said you hated them. They've been around so long that sometimes they're like a wall you bump into and don't even see. But they've been there even through sagging diapers and soaring achievements. They've endured being sprayed in the face with strained carrots, having chewing gum spit out in the palm of their hands, and using their teeth to untie knots out of shoestrings. They're fired every other day and told they're no longer needed, but nothing changes. They're not going anywhere. When their sons have a hairline like the state of Texas, they're still there saying, "Mind your manners." That kind of a mama's love is obviously a reflection of God's love. And as I've learned about the faith of Christ, and I've seen in the New Testament the passages that say, like Peter writes in 1 Peter 4, "Above all, keep loving one another earnestly, since love covers a multitude of sins." The idea of the steadfast love of the Lord has become so precious to me and my family because it speaks of the God who makes a covenant, who makes a promise, and then He's going to find a way to keep it. He'll be there. In Lamentations in the Old Testament, in chapter 3 and verse 22, there's the precious statement, "The steadfast love of the Lord never ceases. His mercies never come to an end." I can appreciate that partly because I've seen it being practiced toward a bunch of boys. Next, I know in the Lord, and I got from my mom first, that you can make it through unimaginable things if you have to, and still live and laugh. I read somewhere that the French used to give medals to moms. It happened after World War I when they lost over 4% of their total population. In 1920, France awarded a Bronze Star to moms who had 5 children, a Silver Star to moms who had 8 children, a silver medal, and a gold medal to moms who had 10 children. My mom was borderline gold medal in that way. But when she was just past 30, she got left with all of us. I remember asking her that night what we were going to do. And we just went on, and we did the best we could, but it was because of someone's presence who understood that's what you do. When I've thought about what the Lord says to His people, and I've realized He never says bad things won't happen. What He does say, Hebrews 13 as an example, is, "I'll never leave you or forsake you." So we may confidently say, "The Lord is my helper, I will not fear." There's a wonderful passage at the end of the Old Testament prophet Habakkuk where he's dealing with some stuff he doesn't understand, why God's letting it happen. And he finally says, even if the olive trees don't produce, even if the grain fields fail, even if the flocks all perish, and even if the herds are not present, yet will I rejoice in the Lord. He's gonna make it through, and He's gonna serve the Lord. He's gonna do His best anyhow. It's important to know that you can make it through, and you still can laugh and be happy, and you don't have to keep on living in the bad thing that happened. I'm always grateful with my mother. Things like holidays and celebrations became more important to her and not less. She's always ready to laugh at some silly joke that some of us had or at some funny thing that happened. I know in the Lord, but I got from my mom, fifth, that when you're a member of a family, not everything is about you, and that you're responsible for your impact on the other members of that family. This is a lesson that was introduced in our lives gradually as we went along. It often, when we were little kids, it often was associated with what happens when turmoil occurs and your answer to why this is happening is, "He started it." We found out right away that we still were responsible, and that we had the answer for ourselves in that way, because our lives touch other lives. The New Testament, in a very different context in Romans 14, reminds us in verse 7 there, "None of us lives to himself, none of us died ourselves." That's nowhere truer than in a family. So we learned that we had to think about how what we did impacted the others. In Luke 6, the Sermon on the Plain, as we call it in Jesus' teaching, he says in verse 31, "As you wish that others would do to you, do so to them." A family is a place where we should be learning first to think about what we would want if we were in the other person's situation, and then to take that action, to live positively in that way. In Luke 6 and verse 36, Jesus says also that we're to be merciful, like we need merciful. Those two principles in connection with this thought here make up a whole lot of everyday life in relationship in a family. It's important that we learn not everything is about us in order for us to be able to engage in healthy relationship. How will we have a family where our task is to bless the others present if we've never realized this first thing? I'm grateful to Mom for that. I know in the Lord, and I got from Mom, that people are mostly good and that there is joy in doing good things in a community. People are mostly good. In a world of bad headlines and of terrible things swapped back and forth being said about each other and posted for everybody to see. In a world where sensational stories of awful evils grab the headlines, we're blessed if we have somebody in our lives who reminds us that people are mostly good, that all those things are known about, those other things are known about because they're exceptions to the general rule and not the general rule. I was blessed to have a mom who loved people and who took joy in doing good things for them. A few years ago, Donna Jordan, Donna's from the congregation here, Donna's brother, David, who lives in Arkansas and who worked for the state down there in connection with a volunteer program, asked Barney if he knew a lady, my mother's name, from Clark Ridge, Arkansas. Barney told David who David was, and David met her because she was the one who logged the volunteer hours served by people in the community where she lived. And it was turned in and it became a volunteer community of the year. She took great joy in that. Her presence in her community meant cookbooks and dinners for families who were dealing with grief and stuff like that. Coconut pies and no-bake cookies were what we all attached to her presence in that ways. Remember the person in the Lord's life, a woman of whom he says she has done what she could. I think of that. And I think of the way the Lord is in that way. And I think that the way the Lord is meant to show up in the lives of people in the community. Remember 1 John 4 and 19? We love because he first loved us. There's a scene in the Gospels where Jesus has a conversation with the man we know as the rich young ruler. We remember him because of the sad fact that he walks away from the Lord unwilling, at least at that moment, to respond to what the Lord said he needed to do to attend to what was lacking in his life. But in the middle of that conversation, in Mark 10 and verse 21, it says, "And Jesus, looking at him, loved him." Jesus saw the good in him and not just the sad thing that happened when he walked away. Then, "I know in the Lord, but I got from my mother, that sometimes being all right, things being all right, really means accepting what you can't change and then coping with it." There were definitely times like that in our family's journey. And Mom was the one, while the rest of us worried about what we were going to do, got around to just accepting things as they were instead of how we wished that they were, and then dealing with them. That remarkable ability, which says, "Well, if this is where I need to be, okay," is something that is an admirable quality wherever it's found, and it's something that the Lord and His people deal with. Remember Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane? We're going to sing about that in a few moments. Remember, "Nevertheless, not as I will, but as you will." Some of that attitude starts in a mother who is loving like the Lord says. So we're always of good courage. Yes, we're of good courage. 2 Corinthians 5, verse 6, verse 8. That doesn't mean just heroic, strong, let's get this done, rah-rah living. It means just accepting how things are and living. And that is what so much of life is about. So many of the things that I got from Mom that I treasure now were the Lord's first. That's why today we are thinking about the God of moms. I'm not suggesting that the only good moms are Christian moms. I know that isn't so, and you do too. But I am suggesting that the things good moms do were a part of the nature of the Lord first. Folks, the God of the Bible, Exodus 34 and verse 6 and 7 tells us, the God of the Bible is compassionate and gracious, slow to anger, running over in love and faithfulness, keeping love to thousands and for always, forgiving all kinds of foolishness and immaturity and wrongdoing. Yet He does not leave the guilty unpunished. He's not an enabler. Now, which of those qualities can a person do without and be a good mom? Don't good moms do the things the Lord does, whether they know that's why they're doing it or not, and whether they even believe in Him or not? I think they do. I think God is the God of moms. And I think we love them because we see in them what really is a part of Him. The real question is how that's going to get passed on to the third and fourth generation. Becoming a disciple of Jesus Christ, and by that I mean learning from Him and imitating Him, makes the principles that we've just enumerated such a part of life that they can be passed on to the third and fourth generation. And that seems important to me, doesn't it, to you? It's a good reason to be a Christian. It's a good reason to say, I believe that in Jesus we see these parts of the nature of God that we need in our lives. It's a good reason to make that good confession and to be baptized into Christ and to walk in the light and to be a presence among the Lord's people that's going to help others in that way too. To all of you who are with us in these services today, that's something that you can still do, and I hope you will. Thank you so much for moms. Thanks to the Lord for making them who they are.